Hello everyone, and welcome to my Antony and Cleopatra update podcast. I saw it last Monday in the presence of Quentin Denton superstar Luke Lane, and I saw it this Monday in the presence of Quentin Denton superstar Luke Lane. There's a slight feeling of deja vu here, but of course the play has developed and it has become better, as you'd expect, notwithstanding how good it was last week. This is natural because casts grow into their roles. They find things to expand or possibly drop or play upon. So there were quite a number of changes, mostly small changes, but still extremely noticeable, I thought. And they were nearly all improvements. There was one dropped action during a line. This is how pedantic I'm becoming. One dropped action during a line that I missed that I thought was really funny the first time. I forgot to put it in my podcast, so I'm going to mention it later. And then bemoan the fact that it's gone away, but probably with a sound reason. And but apart from that, all of the other ones, I think, were fantastic. So I will come to the changes that have developed over the week in a moment or two. But first of all, I've quite a number of apologies to make. Looking at it last night and remembering what I recorded last week, I realised that there were lots of things that people did, actors and the director, that I didn't praise, and I feel quite bad about it actually. But I think the only way around this really is to blame Flora, because she was so good as Cleopatra, and I was so enthusiastic about her performance that I overlooked saying some other things. She still is, of course. The play is, if you listen to last week's pod, the play is slanted Cleopatra's way. In fact, I think this is actually Cleopatra and Antony rather than Antony and Cleopatra. But because of that, I did overlook things. There's also the nature of podcasts. I'm more used to writing than to speaking the reviews, and I just forget things. It's as simple as that. When I'm writing, of course, I go back, I check, I recheck, and I put them in. When you're speaking, it's actually slightly difficult to remember everything. And what did I miss? Well, I didn't actually praise Andrew Stephen enough. That's part of another wider issue, actually, of me coming to the festival every year. I did say last week that when I see certain names, I think, well, that'll be brilliant. And then, of course, when you write or dictate a review, you don't remember to say what it must be like for somebody for the first time. So had I been seeing Andrew Stephen for the first time, I would have raved about him more. And that's true for all of the regulars and other casts like Charles Maguire and Tessa Hatz and, well, all of you. That I just look at it and I think, oh, well, that's going to be great. And of course, what you do is you don't stress that enough. You don't stress the new performance enough, I mean. So, for example, let's say I was coming to the festival in 2018 and Andrew was playing Macbeth, and 2019 and Andrew was playing King Lear, I just think to myself, oh, that'll be absolutely fantastic. And of course, I'd forget to say how fantastic it was when it actually happened. So that's one apology, which probably spreads across quite a lot of plays. Another apology is people I didn't make enough of. I did mention that Michael Guest Caesar's mannerisms were excellent, but I think that's about all I said. And in fact, it is absolutely crucial to the play, the way he conducts himself. It's a marvellous Caesar, and the way he conducts himself, the way he deals with his sister, the way he deals with Antony, the way he deals with everything really, is quite magnificent. And of course, he's got the wonderful line about the time of universal peace is coming, which is so crucial to the play. And you have to remember what was actually happening to Rome at the time. I mean, the whole world was about to change, or the whole known world at the time was about to change completely. And obviously, seriously, on Shakespeare's mind, what this meant, and it sort of links into Cymbeline as well, and being set at the same time as the birth of Christ. So I didn't say it, and very many apologies, Michael. And there were other people I didn't nearly praise enough. We had Teddy Corbett as Agrippa and Thyreus, and he had a heck of a night, actually. His look at the end, when the very, very end, the final moment before the applause breaks out, his look back at the tableau of Cleopatra and her two beautiful maids, or if that's the correct word, because they seem more friends than mates, really. His look back was very meaningful. And that was a highlight, but what I really was impressed with, and I should have said this last week, it's going to be full of apologies, again apologies, was the way that he and Scott Loader went about their parts as Agrippa and Maecenas all the way through. Very different characters, but they played off Ina Barbas. Scott was absolutely magnificent in his Maecenas role. The way he walks, holds his hands, considers things, the way he looks when the rest of the action is going on, is something well worth paying attention to. And I did pay attention to it, I just forgot to say it. But I think my main apologies actually go to the director, because there were various things that were very important to the play that I just didn't mention last week. The use of music, which you would possibly expect, but it's very subtly done, very well done. The Roman-Egyptian dichotomy is just underpinned by the music that comes in the background. And of course the visuals, which you would expect with Dr. Simon Bell. The visuals were excellent. I did mention a little bit last week about it, but I didn't actually talk about the sparkling panels that surround the stage. The way the light catches them and they reflect it's entrancing, actually. And I think I missed, or perhaps it's been added. This is the problem. I'm about to go on to things that I think have been added, but of course my attention may have been elsewhere at the same time last week, but there's a recurring thing, so I can't imagine it's new. But it's the use of Apple, and I had missed how good that was. It's both funny, it's both linking, and of course it's deeply meaningful. A woman being tempted by an apple and biting into it does bring a certain story to mind, after all. And the other thing, which I presume is to the credit of Dr. Bell, but may well actually be to the credit of the cast, or a combination of both, is one of the very funniest things, I think, in the play, which I absolutely adore. I think one of the funniest things in the play is the way that everybody tries to speak in Cleopatra's presence, but she just doesn't let them. So there's this glorious moment when, you know, Antony's dying. He's got moments on the planet to go. And let me speak. And of course she immediately says, no, let me speak. It is actually, in the middle of the tragedy, it's very, very funny, because all the way through the play, she has been talking over everybody. And that was lovely. There were a couple of things about Iris that struck me this time. One of which actually did strike me last time, and again, I forgot to say it, apologies. And that was the way she died. I can't remember, and it's probably my fault. I should go and check. But what the hell, I'm not going to. Somebody can write in and tell me. I didn't remember that Cleopatra actually killed her, and certainly not in the way that she did. So I don't know if that's an invention or if I've just forgotten. But the other thing that I certainly didn't see last week, or I would have commented on it, was the way that she grinned as the poor messenger was taken out to be whipped. She was positively glowing with grinning and a glint in her eye as she stepped off the stage to watch the whipping. Now, she does grin nearly all the time. Both her and Rachel Fenwick are just marvellous as sort of backing support to Cleopatra, and they know everything that's going through their mistress's mind, and they react to it with great humour all the way through. So she does grin all the way through, but there was a particularly evil glint in her eye as she went off to see that whipping, honestly. Another absolutely marvellous touch, which I didn't mention last week, and either goes down to director Simon Bell or Michael Guest as Caesar, which is when he witnesses the three ladies dead and he applauds. I just thought that was an absolutely brilliant touch of what Cleopatra's all about. Cleopatra was, or is in Shakespeare's play, an actress. That's what she is. She performs all the time for the public. And this was her last great performance. And here was somebody applauding it as though he was an audience member. I just thought that brought out all the themes which underline performance and reality throughout the play. It was just a lovely touch. And so we're very well done for that. So what was the one change that I didn't like so much? Well, it was Alexander Gordon-Wood as the absolutely adorable Ina Barbas. Oh, actually, I should also say that as far as I remember, the ending, how Ina Barbas exits, has been changed. I thought it was an improvement. I thought it was better this week. But I loved it last week too, so it's a bit of a hard thing to say. It's obviously heartbreaking both ways, but I think that actually had been changed for the good, even though it was already good, which means that I've now forgotten what I was going to say. Oh yes, the line that I wasn't quite so impressed with last week when Alex said, don't trust to rotten planks, talking about Antony fighting in sea, obviously, which was an enormous tactical error that the real Antony, the non-Egyptian Antony, would never have made. He said, trust not to rotten planks, and he actually bashed his walking stick down on the planks of the stage. And I thought that was very, very funny. However, it's gone now, and it might be, of course, because they're performing on a wonderful stage, and it might have seemed inappropriate to call it rotten planks when they're not rotten planks. But it did strike me as funny the first time round. Other changes, which I thought were all good. It did seem to me that when Antony's armour is put on by Eros and Cleopatra after yet another night of revelry, of course, it seemed to me that had changed and that Antony was more drunken and more out of control than he had been the week before. Again, I'm not entirely sure at my age I should trust my memory, but that is how it struck me. And there was a really, really huge improvement. I keep using that word, I'm sorry. There was a huge improved innovation, whatever, when coins were thrown at the moment when poor dear Gareth Llewellyn was going through that tortuous interview with Cleopatra and telling her about Octavia. There was a great introduction of coin throwing, which visually made much more sense of what was going on than last week. Now, I loved it last week, and in a way it isn't needed, you know what's going on, but it was a nice touch and it brought the imagery of the poetry of that scene right to the fore. So as you can tell, I'm running out of steam and it's an update. I hope you like it. I hope I've rectified some of my flaws from last week, and God bless you all for a wonderful show.